It truly is a pleasure for me to address you here today. This is the first time I've been asked to speak at a BIF conference, and it is an honor. In 2001, when I attended the first conference, if you would have said that 10 years later I'd be standing here talking to you about hair coat and cows, I promise no one would have laughed harder than I would have. But I think it's a topic of some interest, and I hope you'll enjoy what I have to present. Please, if you have any questions, as Robert said, this is a less formal session than the one this morning. Feel free to raise your hands and interrupt me, but I will also have time for questions at the end. So, heat stress is a concern in certain parts of the country. You could argue that it's a concern in all parts of the country during some part of the year, that being the United States. But it's a bigger concern and for a longer period of time as we move south. When animals become heat stressed, we see reduced conception rates, we see decreased milk production, we see decreased feed intake, and reduced weight gains. And in extreme cases, of course, we can see death. Animals who've had past health problems, such as respiratory disease, are more susceptible to heat stress. Cattle in confinement, or the environment we have the cattle in, can also contribute to heat stress, as there can be less air movement, more radiant heat due to concrete or compact dirt that the cattle are standing on, obviously typically more of a problem in dairies and feedlots, and in cases where there's less shade, which often happens in confinement, we can get greater heat stress. And as cattle get heavier, they're also more susceptible to heat stress. And of course, we all know that darker colors absorb sunlight more than lighter colors, and that is no different in animals. Darker hided animals are going to absorb more sunlight and thus be more susceptible to heat stress than lighter colored animals. I think everyone saw this morning some pictures of Nelores. Okay, I don't think it's any coincidence they're white. I don't think that's an accident. So we're all familiar with common signs of heat stress. The cattle can be slobbering, high respiration rate, decreased mobility, decreased appetite, and just poor general health. Cows use evaporative cooling to reduce their body temperature. But factors that decrease the ability of the animal to cool off are the humidity. So as humidity rises, of course, it's more difficult for the animal to cool off. The wind speed, you know, just like us, if there's a little bit of a breeze on a hot day, you know, it feels a lot better than if there's no breeze at all. Respiration rate, so as the cattle get hotter and experience heat stress, they increase the respiration rate. And then sweat gland activity. So when humidity increases, water from sweat and even sweat vapor gets trapped between hair follicles. Energy is expended with thermoregulation. Okay, if we get increased respiration rate, we get increased sweating, those animals are expending more energy, and they're likely eating less. And certainly in growing animals, that's not going to help us. In the lactating female, the gestating female, that's energy going to something other than lactation and gestation, which are the things we want her to be doing. I think this is a multifaceted problem. Certainly there are differences in hair coat type. As Robert alluded to a little bit ago, there are short-haired cattle, there are long-haired cattle. And it was interesting that Nelores got mentioned this morning because that was the picture I chose to use. Obviously, an extreme example here, we have the Nelore cattle that are very short-haired. And I put a Scottish Highlander up here to drive home the point that there's variation in hair coat length in cattle. But even if we were to walk out into a herd of Angus cattle, and I looked at about 1,600 of them in the state of Missouri last week, I can assure you, there's significant variation within the Angus breed for hair length. But independent, related to, I shouldn't say independent, that's probably a bad word. Related to but separate from hair length is the ability of the animal to shed their hair coat. So whether the animal's a short-haired animal or a long-haired animal, they're still going to take on a winter coat, and they're still going to shed that winter coat in the spring. However, there's variation in how quickly those animals shed that winter hair coat, and that is really the focus of the research that we've been doing. We haven't focused on differences in hair type. We know they're out there, and we know they're important, but we've focused on the ability of the animal to shed the winter hair coat. So here's just a quick example of an animal, and you can kind of see the curly brown hairs here that are part of that animal's winter hair coat, whereas this animal over here has more of a slick summer hair coat. And I apologize for the lighting. Those aren't showing up real well. The other factor that producers mention to us a lot is forage type. We especially hear this a lot from producers who are grazing infected fescue. And the fescue belt in the United States seems to be growing. It's certainly not shrinking. And there are animals, I believe, that shed fine no matter what you do to them. There's animals that don't shed at all no matter what you do to them. There's animals that will shed fine as long as you don't put them on fescue. And then there's animals that they shed fine if they're eating something other than fescue, but you put them on hot fescue and you got a problem. Okay? So hair coat type, hair coat shedding, and what they're grazing are three factors that are interrelated, but they're different things. And what we have focused on in our research is one of those, which is the ability to shed the hair coat. We recognize the importance of the others. We would like to look into them, but you got to walk before you run. So obviously you're familiar with most of these forages, but I just put some common ones up here. Our Kentucky fescue 31, white clover, red clover, coastal Bermuda, and big blue stem. And these are some of the common forages that we've seen over the last month or so when we've been out taking hair coat scores on cattle. Now, it's always fun to be working in cutting-edge science, right? So a few years ago when this all got started, it was a call or a contact from Sally Northcutt that asked me if we could look into something to do related to adaptability of Angus cattle. So we went to the literature and we found a paper from 1960 on hair coat shedding. It was done in Australia. They used a 7-point system. They showed it to be a moderately to highly heritable trait. It was a fairly repeatable trait, which means if somebody went out and scored the cow today and they went out and scored her again the next day or a week later, the scores tended to be the same. Okay? So that repeatability, the closer this gets to one, the more it means that the scores were identical. The closer it gets to zero, the more it means that the scores had nothing to do with each other. We're up there at a level, or they were up there at a level of 0.6, where we'd say this is a fairly repeatable trait. The genetic correlation between calf growth, and hair coat score is -0.58. Now, don't let the minus sign fool you. This is a favorable correlation. What that minus signs mean, as hair coat score goes down, weight goes up. And a low hair coat score means an animal sheds out quickly. And high weight is tended to be favorable. So that's what we call a favorable correlation. So don't let the negative trick you there. This is a good relationship. 2006, Colorado State University published a paper where they looked at replacement limousine sires for Brazilian herds. They used a 5-point scoring system, which is essentially what we've used. Their heritability estimate was 0.3, so again, a moderately heritable trait, about like our growth traits. And they conclude that selection for improved hair coat shedding in U.S. cattle would increase the growth rate of their progeny in Brazil. So what they were asking is, if we have limousine sires in the United States that shed out faster, do their progeny grow better in Brazil? And they concluded that, yes, they do. There was another estimate for this trait in 1975, and the heritability in that experiment was 0.38. So in the three experiments that have been published prior to ours, All of them indicated this is a pretty moderately heritable trait. We can make progress with this trait. When looking at slick calves versus calves with full hair coats, Olson and co-workers in 2003 found no difference in weaning weights, but they did note faster post-weaning gains. So the slick-haired animals had faster post-weaning gain. So our objective in our initial experiment was to assess the amount of variation in the ability to shed the hair coat in Angus cattle and determine the relationship between hair coat shedding and calf pounds of calf weaned and body condition score. So now, we're looking at the hair coat or the ability of the cow to shed her hair coat and then looking at the pounds of calf that she weaned. In this experiment, we had 532 animals, but some of those animals were repeated across years, so there were 904 animals in the total data set, or 904 cow observations in the data set that represented 532 independent cows. These cows ranged in age from 3 to 13 years old. The ones at North Carolina State were on endophyte-infected fescue pastures. The ones at Mississippi State, and all this research has been done in collaboration with Dr. Trent Smith and Dr. Jane Parrish at Mississippi State, and Jane's here with us today. At Mississippi State, they had mixed warm-season grasses, annual ryegrass, and non-toxic endophyte-infested tall fescue. There are three locations involved in the experiment. Data was collected once a month during a five-month period during each of 2 years. Okay? So we went out essentially at the end of March, and we scored the cattle. 30 days later, we went again. 30 days later, we went again. And we did that for 5 months. A one score was a slick animal, and a five was a full winter hair coat. So this animal would likely be considered a five, pretty much sporting their full winter hair coat. This animal we're going to call a four. And what makes this animal a four instead of a five? And it's hard to see in this picture, but up here on this animal's neck, it's begun to slick off. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, what you'll see in these cattle is they start to slick off up here on their neck and back here on the hip. And they slick off kind of moving from the outside in and from the top down. I don't know why, but that's the general pattern. Here's a three. You can draw a line right about here. From here up, that animal's slick. From right about here down, that animal still got its winter haircut coat. So again, it's shed on the neck, it's shed on the hip, and it's shedding from the spine down. This animal's a two. And again, these pictures just aren't showing up very well in this light. But right here, this animal still got some winter hair coat. So this animal's a little odd that it didn't slick off up top first. And down in this area, it's still got some winter hair coat. And also down right in this area. Okay? So the difference between a two and a one is usually going to be hair in these type of regions. And then a one is a cow with a fully slick coat. And I think everybody knows what that looks like. So when we started to analyze the data, the way we decided to look at this to try to simplify it a little bit is we broke cows into two different categories. Those that achieved a hair coat score of three or less. So a one, a two, or a three prior to the 1st of June. And those animals that on the 1st of June were still scoring a 4 or a 5. Those were the two groups we broke them into. And for those of you who like to hear about the statistics, we had the month shed, the year, the location, and the sex of calf all were in the model. And sire was treated as a random effect. For animals, I jumped a little ahead. We did break them into two groups. But what we're showing here is animals that scored a three or less in March. So if an animal had a hair coat shedding score of three or less in March, The average weaning weight of those calves was 272 kilograms. Okay? And I apologize, I probably should have changed this to pounds to make it easier for everybody. But 2.2 times that number will give you pounds. Okay? And that represented just over 15% of all the animals. Animals that scored a 3 or less by April, and that was about 22% of the animals, their calves had an adjusted 205-day weaning weight of 270. Okay, now, this group is not included in here. Okay, these are animals that had a 3 or less in March. These animals did not have a 3 or less in March, but did have a 3 or less score in April. Next group is the May group. That represented about 25% of our animals, and their adjusted 205-day weight was 263 kilograms. So I think you're seeing the trend here. Okay? The later in the year that the animals shed their hair coat, the lower the adjusted 205-day weight of their calves. We had very few animals, about 7 or 8%, that still in July in North Carolina and Mississippi had hair coat scores of 4 or 5. I can tell you those animals are hurting. And we didn't wean, their calves weren't weaned off very heavy compared to the others. Now, one thing about this, these are fall calving herds. So in that North Carolina herd, those calves are weaned by June 15th. So what's interesting about the data, to some extent to me, is even though calves are weaned off fairly early in the summer, those cows that hang onto their hair longer are weaning smaller calves. We are now collecting data on spring calving herds. We just, in the initial study, in Mississippi and North Carolina, pretty much all those herds were fall calving herds. We are now collecting data on spring calving herds. Well, we haven't got to, I mean, literally last week we scored 5,000 cows, but I'll get to that later. And I didn't get to analyze it over the weekend. Age of cat. We had
cows that calved earlier in the fall that had bigger calves on in the spring.
We adjusted for age of calf. I mean, it's adjusted to a 5-day weight. But what you're asking is, if they calved earlier, did that make any difference? I don't recall that we specifically looked at that. So if we want to go through here and break this out a little bit, if we look at cows that had a score of 3 or less in March versus those in April, you know, they didn't really differ. But the ones that had a score of 3 or less in March versus the ones in May, you know, we start seeing differences in the size of their calves. And we can go through all kinds of combinations here, but I'm not going to bore you with all these numbers. The gist of that is cows that shed earlier have heavier calves at weaning. So then we broke the cows into the two groups I mentioned earlier. Cows that had a score of 1, 2, or 3 in March, April, or May were in one group. Cows that, as of June 1st, still had a hair coat shedding score of 4 or 5 were in the second group. And then we compared those two groups. The difference in the adjusted 205-day weight of the calves between those two groups was 24.4 pounds. Now, why did we look at the data this way? Well, from a practical application standpoint, I'm confident not many of you want to go out and do hair coat shedding scores on your cows once a month for 5 months. If I suggest that, you're going to laugh at me, and for good reason. So what we were asking ourselves is, can we come up with a system where producers could go out at one point in time, put a hair coat shedding score in their cattle, and have some impact? And in the Southeast, in North Carolina, Mississippi, that area, our best recommendation is at this time that you could go out on the 1st of June and score hair coat on your cows, and the ones that still are 4s and 5s should be a little bit of a concern to you. Now, we're not suggesting that you go call a cow solely on that basis. A producer asked me earlier, well, So what if she hangs onto her hair as long as she weans a big calf? As long as she breeds back every year and weans a big calf, by all means. I'm not suggesting you get rid of her. But if her calves are coming in below average and she's got some other problems and she's hanging on to her hair, you know, maybe she needs to find a new home. So genetic relationships, and everybody knows the heritability of adjusted 205-day weight, but we threw that in here anyway. Adjusted 205-day weight, we got a heritability of about 0.27, and that's within the range of what you would expect. Hair coat shedding, our heritability estimate is 0.35. So if you remember back to the literature I referred to earlier, there were estimates of 0.33, 0.38, and then the one from the 1960s of like 0.6. So the ones that have been reported in the last 20 years, our estimates of heritability are very consistent with those. And it's a moderately heritable trait, about the same as growth rate. Our repeatability is 0.65. Okay, very similar to the other repeatabilities I referred to in the literature. Essentially, to a large extent, we confirmed what was already reported in the literature. So, our suggestion was, as I've already stated, that about the end of May, about June 1st, is when folks in the Southeast would want to put hair condition scores on their cattle, or hair shedding scores on their cattle. Selecting for hair coat shedding in the Southeast, we would expect there to be a response to selection because it's a moderately heritable trait. And we would expect cows that slick off sooner to wean heavier calves. So why does this happen? The only honest answer to that is, I don't know. Why do cows that slick off sooner wean heavier calves? Now, we can speculate a lot. We can say, well, you know, they're not as heat stressed, and so they can put more energy into lactation, and they spend more time grazing, and they're not standing in the pond. I mean, we can go through a lot of different scenarios, but the honest answer from a scientific standpoint is, I don't know. Prolactin is something, though, that interests us. Prolactin is a hormone. It's often associated with milk letdown. But interestingly enough, in cattle, prolactin is not a driver of milk production. Growth hormone is the primary driver of milk production. However, prolactin is involved in mammary development in the developing female and in hair regression. So if we were going to go and try to look at, do some basic research and try to figure out the biological mechanism for what we've observed, we would be interested in looking at prolactin and trying to understand the relationship between that hormone, hair coat shedding, and the weaning way of the calves. But that's purely taking a shot in the dark based on what we think we know about the hormone. Anything in Montana regarding hair coat shedding? Not to my knowledge. Can I come back to that in a couple of slides? I agree with you. We'll come back to that. Diet. Certainly the endophyte infected tall fescue is affecting heat stress in cattle. That we all know that. And it certainly affects the ability of at least some cattle to shed their hair coat. And ambient temperature. I can tell you this year, in most parts of the country, we've had kind of a cool, wet spring, and the cattle aren't shedding their hair coats as fast as we might have expected. They're hanging onto that hair a little longer. There's certainly some genotype-by-environment interactions we need to be concerned about. So let's say we have a particular sire, and he has progeny grazing coastal Bermuda grass on the coastal plains of North Carolina, and he's got progeny in the Piedmont, which is the central region of North Carolina, grazing hot fescue. Are those progeny going to perform the same? Maybe not. There could clearly be some genotype by environment interactions there. We need to look at different regions, and I listed Montana, North Dakota, maybe Arizona. You know, a hot, arid region as opposed to hot, humid regions. Now, I think we need to look in other parts of the country. We certainly, you know, it's in theory, or one concern that's been raised is, well, let's say I go select for slick cattle. Are those cattle going to freeze to death in Montana? You know, I don't know the answer to that, but certainly it's a valid question. What other traits should we look at relative to hair coat shedding? Well, we think longevity is one of them. Certainly if it affects reproduction and if it's a herd where they're calling all their open females, we wouldn't be surprised to see an association between longevity and hair coat shedding. Gestation length. I know some folks that tell me their cows are calving 2 weeks earlier than they think they normally should just because of heat stress. Now, I talked to a producer recently that said my cows will just start calving 2 weeks earlier than what would normally be predicted, and I'm confident it's due to heat stress. And what about puberty? Okay, we haven't done any work in heifers. We have collected some data and bred heifers, but we haven't analyzed it. All the cows we've looked at have produced a calf. Okay, now we've had in this data set, they were all cows that were lactating except in June and July, I think. But what happens in the developing heifer? We don't know. So where are we going with this? Well, we presented this data to American Angus, and they expressed some interest in continuing to pursue this subject. They asked us to put together some local support. Between Dr. Trent Smith and myself, we were able to get about $20,000 in local support from the state of North Carolina. Well, not the state, but from organizations within Mississippi and North Carolina. And then the American Angus Association graciously supplemented that. And we put together a proposal. I think a proposal actually called for $3,000, but we were purposely undershooting there. Our goal was to get about 5,000 to 7,000 cows. We've collected about 6,400 records. We did 5,000 just last week. We had a team in Texas that did 2,200. I was with another person in Missouri. We did 1,600, and another group did 1,000 in Virginia. That data is literally not even entered into the computer yet. It's still written on handwritten sheets, so obviously I haven't had a chance to analyze it. For the current project, we have about 6,420 records in hand, and I kind of broke them out by state here just so you could kind of see the regions we're looking at. We did not make it up to Montana. I will admit to you, it thought crossed my mind at one point that, hey, you know, I'm going to be in Bozeman. What I need to do is just stay an extra week and hair coat score some cows. And then I remembered I was gone to Missouri all last week, and I'm going to be in Montana all this week, and I like being married, so I'm going home next week. But, you know, I definitely think we need to be looking in other regions of the country. And we are starting to get the Southeast and at least the Midwest and the Deep South, as far as Texas anyway, covered. So, folks that have contributed to this, Kent Gray is a PhD student of mine, finished up in August. He has probably done the bulk of the work on this in terms of data analysis. Peggy Overton is a technician. Her and Kent have collected all of the data in North Carolina to date. And Kayla Fleetwood is a young lady starting a master's with me who spent all last week with me in Missouri collecting data. As I mentioned before, Trent Smith and Jane Parrish, and Jane standing in the middle in the back there, are the folks at Mississippi State, and I know some of their graduate students are involved, and I think at least one of them is here, and I apologize for not getting all those names on here. And then we've had some cooperators in Mississippi, the Evans and the Howells. These are the data the 500 are reported. I'm not going to list all the cooperators for the 6,400 records because that would take a little while. Funding is coming from American Angus, Mississippi Angus Association, Mississippi BCIA, Mississippi Agriculture Research Service, North Carolina Agriculture Research Service, and North Carolina Cattlemen's Association. And I'd be happy to entertain any other questions.